Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
We're back to the Total Education Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network, TotalTutor.net. For more information, you can email me, nhaley at TotalTutor.org, or follow me on Twitter, TotalTutor. And I always enjoy the Celebrity Show for one reason. Again, I create these relationships. We tweet things out. We continue the conversation, and I learned so much about them. So I want to welcome the program, HDTV's Designed All-Stars winner, Leslie Ezell. And you are much more a jack of all trades in so many ways. Leslie, thanks for calling.
Thank you so much for having me on the show. I'm really delighted that you decided to spend some time with me.
Well, you have such an interesting background when you talk about former Dallas Cowboy cheerleader, raising children, a wife, and all these different things. It makes it such an interesting conversation. But I wanted to go into, I guess, your celebrity experience, being on HGTV and winning the Design All-Stars. Tell us about that experience and how it happened.
Well, let me just start by saying it's way more fun to win than it is to lose. Because I was on Design Star season 6, and I did pretty well on the show, but I was sitting home packing, and that was just really not fun. But I tried to make the most of that. Tried to make the most of that experience by, you know, I had to keep on a nice, happy face when I came back from the show from what I was doing, and I had to sit on the secret that I had not won for many, many months. And I actually gave myself a candy party because I didn't know how to tell my kids. You know, my kids actually thought I won the gold. They thought I won Design First Season 6. And as we're watching the whole series, you know, they're like, oh, my God, you totally won. You won. You won. You won. And then for the actual finale, I actually ended up throwing myself this big, gigantic party to benefit Susan G. Komen. I'm a breast cancer survivor. And I had 100 of my closest friends and press there to all watch me pink on national television. And my kids bless their hearts at the end of it. They're like, Mommy, did that really happen? Did you just really lose? I'm like, yes, I did. I lost. I didn't want to have everybody sitting at home crying over it. I wanted to try to make the most, make it a positive, you know, event. So that's why I decided to do the fundraiser. And then from that and all the work that I did in between Design Star Season 6 is kind of really what brought me back to Design Star All-Star. I just continued to really, really work hard and try to do as much as I could for Susan G. Komen. I ended up being honorary chairperson for Susan G. Komen and kept very, very busy. And then luckily, HGTV invited me back for the All-Star, their very first All-Star show. And thank God for that, because this time I brought home the gold, and woohoo, way more fun, So, anybody who says losing is fun is lying.
So, so being on each week and then someone being eliminated, it must be nerve-wracking, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And, you know, actually, when you're those, I don't know about all the reality television shows, but certainly for Design Star on HGTV, that is a glimpse of how stressful it is, what you're sitting at home watching. You know, you can be that armchair designer sitting at home going, why is she doing that? And why is she doing this? And why is everybody crying and running around like crazy people? Well, I got there and found myself on the second day running down the streets of New York in 6-inch heels, crying, stressing out, trying to figure out how I was going to make a room happen. So it is actually more intense in life than it is, like, when you're actually filming it, it's more intense than what you're seeing at home. And when they're doing the timing, you know, they tell you you've got 30-minute designers, right. You have 40 minutes. It's more like you have 5 minutes. It's really, it's way more stressful than what I ever imagined it would be. So, you know, kudos to all the folks that have won prior to me. And, you know, I mean, it's really stressful. Being able to, I mean, designing in general and doing something creative is stressful in that, you know, it's very subjective and you're trying to please someone or people in general. And you're trying to please yourself and stay true to yourself with your design. But at the same time, then you have that added layer of, oh, my God, I have, you know, a paintbrush, some crayons, and I have to create magic in 30 minutes, you know? I mean, it really becomes really intense when you have a camera. I mean, literally, camera's up my nose hole, you know? I mean, right, like right there at my nostril. Yeah. And so every little bit of sweat that's hanging, you know, like within, and then I got a sweat ball hanging right at the end of my nose. They see it, you know, on TV, national TV, as you're sweating it out trying to create magic. So it was intense. It was very intense. But honestly, like, as far as my career is concerned, absolutely the best thing that's happened to me thus far. So I'm very, very proud of it.
So did you ever think you'd be on television? Did you ever think that was going to happen? What in your career?
Well, actually, you know, my background of being a Dallas Cowboy cheerleader, and I actually have a background in theater and, you know, commercial training. So actually, yes, you did.
Yeah, okay.
Years. Yeah, I've been doing this for quite a while. I have to tell you, I kind of fall in that category of thank God for reality television, because I'm one of those frustrated actors, you know, that worked for 10 years of their life.
Yes.
Trying to get a part.
I talk to them every week, so I understand.
You do, right? I mean, honestly, like, it's opened up a whole new world. Bethany Frankel, who I absolutely, she's my idol. I think she's just the cat meow. I read one of her books, and same thing with her. She was an actress for many years, and then thank God for the other things that she was capable of doing. That's kind of what brought her whole career to fruition and brought her the fame that she has now. So I kind of follow that same category. I definitely always had art in my back pocket. I've been a painter since I was, you know, in high school and trained for that. And my mother was an artist. My brother's a painter. And so that runs in our family. Designing has always been something I love. And so it's kind of a perfect storm for me, really, because I'm a big old hog, you know, a camera hog. I have fun on TV. I love being in front of the camera. It's fun for me. And so when this opportunity came about, I'm like, this is perfect. This is exactly what I want to be when I grow up. I want to be on television with my own design show of sorts. So,
but in the reality world compared to the acting world, come on now. We could talk about certain things in reality, like my new favorite show, even though I think it's completely fixed, Amish Mafia. But Amish Mafia. You never watched Amish Mafia?
You have to watch it,
and then you'll have to tweet it out. Tweet it out, because I had to. I tweeted Manti Te'o saying, "What's more real, your girlfriend or Amish Mafia?" So it was,
I've got to see it. You
have to see it, and then you tell me, Leslie. No, but basically what I was saying is that, again, being in front of cameras in this atmosphere, you probably, when you're an actor and a cheerleader, you never thought this was going to happen. I guess how I restated that question. But I had a feeling you had that background, but I completely forgot. I thought just Dallas Cowboy cheerleader. I didn't know you were an actor as well. So was that from being a Dallas Cowboy cheerleader you decided that's the next step is acting?
That was a big life-changing moment for me. So I went from being a Dallas Cowboy cheerleader, you know, in front of, 80,000 some odd people, performing. I got to do the tours, which was the USO DOD tours for all the military men all over the world. It was honestly, wow, it was like such an amazing experience. You cannot ask for a better audience. If you think about that for a minute, these men haven't seen a woman in 6 months, and then here we come and we perform for them for an hour, you know, in various costumes. So they were a very enthusiastic crowd, and that was so rewarding. I loved it. After that, though, that's when I retired from cheerleading, I went into, I studied acting and went to Musical Theater Conservatory for a couple of years, and that's actually when my whole life turned upside down, and that's when I realized that I actually played for the other team. And now, fast forward some 20 years later, me and my wife have 4 kids together, so it was quite the, you know, and it's not an easy thing to do, going from a very, very heterosexual world into what is comfortable for me, but very uncomfortable for everyone around me. I think it took a while, you know, for my cheerleader buddies to kind of get on board with it. It's almost harder for my loved ones and my friends around me than it was actually for me when I came to that realization. But yeah, that's kind of, so I blame it on theater school. Theater is the reason I turned gay. I was mixing with the artsy-fartsy folks. The next thing you know, I'm playing for the other team. But you know, that's what my past is. That's what happened to me. And I'm definitely proud of all my life choices. And I mean, there's some mistakes sprinkled in here in my 20s, that's for sure. But you know, for the most part, who I love and my life now is pretty darn perfect for me. I could have never seen this reality. No one, I think, could ever have seen this reality television thing exploding the way that it did. Remember that movie with a long time ago that they had? It was kind of the precursor to all the reality television. It was with Jim Carrey. Do you remember that movie? And it was him and his.
Oh yeah. I remember that. Oh, that was an awesome movie. It'll come to me in a second what the movie was. But at the end, it always got you to think, what happened next with him? And it'll come to me.
I know.
The Truman Show. The Truman Show. It was the Truman Show.
Yep. But you know, how brilliant is that? Whoever the creator is of that totally saw that coming. You know what I mean? They saw reality television coming in order to do that strange little movie. It's bizarre where we've come. But for me personally, I'm grateful for it. And actually, the way I feel about the reality television world is, as long as there's some sort of a talent or there's something interesting about the person that the show is about, it's not just blood, you know, it's not swinging mud and, you know, just for the sake of dramatics, you know what I mean? But if there's something there about the person that's unique and interesting, then I enjoy watching them. You know, I get into them. I have to say, I enjoy them. But when it starts getting really just about, I don't know, somebody becoming famous for nothing. Woody Allen recently came out with the movie, I think it's When in Rome, and one of his characters, which is the guy from Life is Beautiful, they did a whole segment on basically making someone famous for absolutely nothing. And I mean, it's so totally Woody Allen. You know, how he just all of a sudden woke up one day and everybody wanted to know what he had for breakfast, you know? It's a really cute movie if you haven't seen it. But if you have your Woody Allen fans, you'll appreciate it. But anyway, for me personally, I you know, it's definitely been a huge benefit for my life. So I'm happy for it.
Well, it sounds like you're definitely happy for it, and looks like. But I agree with you. There are, and I'm not going to tell you the shows. I'll say one, Honey Boo Boo. Making them stars. Oh my gosh, and my wife watches that. Oh. And that's the train wreck of train wrecks. And I'm sure Leslie will end up being on my show at one point in time, because one of the other ones was The Real Housewives. And guess what? I've had two Real Housewives on my show, and I'm in negotiations from New Jersey. And I'm like, but again, we got to do what people like, and it was a very interesting. What's hot now? What is something that you know? And they get it. And honestly, this is the thing between you, anyone in reality TV. They get the public. They understand that the only way for them to continue their 15 minutes of fame is to constantly be connected to their audience. I don't think actors and actresses get that. I think that they think, you know, once you're a star, always a star. But some of them get it by going and doing their own reality show later on. Let's say, AKA Pete Rose and his reality show now. So certain people see that, guess what? Finally, I think through reality TV, people get to choose what they want to watch. Before we were, before the three network, the forced three networks chose what we watched. That's the difference.
Exactly. Yeah, it's so true, isn't it? I mean, that you just said it mouthful like that. That is so true. We actually kind of do have a choice now, and what people are choosing doesn't necessarily align with what I'm choosing, but nevertheless, you know, I mean, people are watching. Like you said, that Honey Boo Boo thing, I totally like that. A complete train wreck. And so, it's like, I've watched it, though. I'll tell you, I've watched it.
Oh,
you know,
my wife forces me to watch it, yes.
Between my fingers, you know, I'm watching it like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm watching this. but you still keep on Dance Moms.
Oh my gosh! I tweeted out the Dance Mom, and she still won't come on my. Because I'm in Pittsburgh, I tweeted her out saying come on my show, and she completely ignored me on Twitter. I said, you know, you're not that big, lady. I'm not gonna say anything more, Leslie. You're not that.
You don't have to. Let me tell you something though. So being a dancer, and the woman who I trained under, she was my mentor and sweetheart. That the woman from Dance Moms absolutely terrifies me. And
Abby Lee,
kids,
yes.
Oh my gosh, she's so the main. Yeah, Abby Lee, right. It doesn't have to be mean. And I'm dying to know if there is this other really nice warm side, because all that we see is the really nasty part.
Oh my gosh, it's unbelievable.
You know, I'm constantly explaining to my kids, and my kids love it too. Okay, so we watch it. And I love the talent of the girls. Like that, there's a talent there. So I love that. But at the same time, I'm watching them being mentally abused by this person
is
just It's so cool. Anyway, I constantly have talked to my kids. That's not normal.
Well, we've had an unbelievable conversation, but one thing you're promoting, and then we're going to bring you back for that topic next, is the Pillow Project. Tell us a little bit about where we can find information, what you're trying to do with that, and then we'll bring you back to talk more about that the next month.
That's perfect. Okay, so I am, this is my new baby, and I'm super, super excited about this pillow. It came out of a place of need, okay? So I was a breast cancer survivor and went through a total of 6 different surgeries. I had in the hospital for 3 weeks at one time, mainly related to trouble with reconstructive surgery, and I had bad reactions to the radiation. But during this process, I was given by one of the organizations, it was a small organization, it wasn't Susan Jacoma, but it was this group that gave me this pillow that I would rest underneath my arm and underneath my underneath the scars that were healing underneath my breast. And I had to have that pillow in order to have any kind of comfort. But it was ugly, okay? It was pink. I don't like pink that much, okay? And it was a bad fabric, and I hid it behind my other pillows.
Okay.
So because I hid that pillow, but I needed it still, I was tired of hiding it. I created a pillow that is really, really a beautiful decorative pillow. And it actually, it's a two-part pillow. It comes apart. Part of it can be used for healing from breast cancer, however, can also be used. It's a multifunctional pillow is what it is. Just like there's life after breast cancer, there's life for this pillow after breast cancer. And that life for this pillow is, it looks similar to those neck rests that you buy at the airport and you put on your neck when you're traveling.
Right.
That part right there is the main part that you use when you're trying to heal from breast cancer. But when you're not using it that way, you can take it on the plane with you and have it with you, and you're not going to forget it in the seat of the plane because, number one, it's a beautiful fabric and it stands out, and number two, because it's special and it has some meaning to you. And also, you won't keep... Personally, I've bought about 5 of those things because I forget to bring them with me, so I buy them at the airport over and over again, or I leave them in the seats, those neck rest things. This decorative pillow sits on your bed. So here's what the other part is. So you've got the one part that goes underneath your neck or whenever you're trying to heal from anything that you need a little bit of a cushion for underneath your arm or wherever you might need it. The other piece of it is a piece that actually sits on your lap. So when you're in bed and you need something to rest your computer on, you have the second piece is exactly for that. You just put it right on top of your legs, and then you can put your computer there or when you're eating in bed, your food on that. It gives you an extra, instead of it just being covers, you have that extra little pillow there, which at the time that I was going through all this, I just kept grabbing other pillows and stacking them up. And now you have this one nice decorative pillow that comes apart. It's kind of hard to explain. It's a visual thing for sure, but it's like a puzzle piece. There's 2 pieces to it. One goes for your healing, and then the other part goes for functionality for your computer. So, and the aside from all of that, it's just a beautiful decorative pillow. So even at worst case, even if no one, needed it for anything else except that they liked the way it looked, that's the part that I'm really proud of. And what separates it from all these other healing pillows is that this thing gets to stay out and be out there on your bed or on your sofa, and it's very, very attractive pillow. So that's what it's about. I'm in production right now. I'm going to come out with my first 5. They're all kind of shades of gray, and so I'm calling it the 5 shades of gray. Wait, wait, nudge, nudge. And that is the full-service pillow because one of the pillows goes between your legs and then the other one goes around your neck. And then there's also this strap involved that keeps the pillow together in one cohesive piece. So that is about to launch in March. And I'm going to be at the big Texas home show as a celebrity guest there, and that will be the first rollout of the pillow. But it's been really cool because when you're going through it, I've had women, after I've been through it, people call me, everybody, if you don't know somebody who's been through breast cancer, wait 30 seconds and you will, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. So I have women call me all the time, hey, what was your best gift when you were going through breast cancer? And so before I had made this pillow, I was like, well, I enjoyed the basket that had the food in it and the magazines, Or the lamb that the one woman sent me was really well packaged. That was great. Now I'm able to say, hey, you know what? This is something that I think that she might like. And so by word of mouth, I've just given them out to women who are actually going through it and have the sweetest three letters back from these women who, you know, I also, you should know that, like, in the decorative strap to the pillows together, I have an inspirational word art that keeps you, hopefully.
Yes.
It's motivating words about being a beautiful survivor. So it's a special message from, you know, one survivor to the next. And it's heartwarming, actually. And so the women that have received it have, you know, been really, really sweet and encouraging as far as, you know, their thoughts on the pillow. So that's been the best trial, you know, to see if it actually works. I know it works for me. I use it all the time. But then when I've had other people that are board with it going, oh, my God, this is an awesome gift. Yeah. And so next plan is to get associated with the with a group, either Susan Gacoman or someone like that, possibly to have some of the proceeds go, you know, to the efforts of a charity that's really taking care of women.
That's great.
Yeah.
All right, Leslie, well, we are running out of time, but we'll definitely have you back next month. But where can we find more information on you, learn more about what you do, and more about the pillow?
Thank you so, so much for having me on the show. I really, really appreciate it, and I look really forward to speaking with you more.
Where can we find? Can we follow you on Twitter, Facebook? Is there different places we can connect with you?
All of the above. I have a couple of different websites. The easiest one is just my name. It's LeslieEzel.com. And, yes, I'm Facebooking, I'm Twittering, I'm Twittering, I'm doing it all. I'm pinning, you name it. It's
okay.
Out there.
So all right, fantastic.
Please, yeah, check me out. And the pillow will be coming out in March, and I'll have that for sale on my website as well. So be looking forward to that.
Fantastic, Leslie. Look forward to talking to you next month. So you take care.
Thanks, Neil. I really appreciate you. Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Total Education Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Education Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network, TotalTutor.net. For more information, you can email me and Haley at TotalTutor.org. For more information, Twitter, TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, and Celebrity Segment. And I'm telling you, I already been promoting this up on Facebook, that I'm interviewing him, and it'll be interviewing all over the syndication at different times. And that's what's so cool, and I'll be tweeting him out every time. I'm really excited to talk to somebody, a former Amazing Race contestant, and I guess a reality television superstar in certain ways, because it's been more than once he's been on reality TV. So I want to welcome the program, Ryan Danz. Ryan, thanks for calling.
Absolutely. This is great. I'm excited to have the conversation.
Right, exactly. And you were a contestant alongside your girlfriend, Abby Ginsburg, and on the last Amazing Race. And so can you tell me how you got involved in the Amazing Race?
Sure, absolutely. So, you know, we were watching as fans. We'd been dating by at that point about a year and a half, and so we'd watched a couple seasons together. And during one of the episodes from season 20, I said to her, you know, back in the day when I did The Apprentice, I knew one of the producers that worked on The Apprentice had moved over to Race, and I wonder if I could at least ask them to put a tape in for us and at least make sure it was seen. And she said, sure, let's give it a shot. And so we spent about a month working on a videotape, and just to be safe, we uploaded that tape to the CBS website, and then when I sent it off to a friend of mine to make sure the casting department would see it, and they called back because of the one we had uploaded generically, just like everyone else does, and we went through sort of a question and answer period, and then they said we're interested, and then when they found out I had done The Apprentice 7 years earlier, they said, sorry, we don't make that exception, no crossovers from competition reality shows from other networks, and thanks but no thanks. And so I think Abby and I were pretty crushed at that point.
Yes.
Because it seemed like it was moving in the right direction, and everything we had heard up until that point is you guys would be great, and then it was no go. And then about a month went by, we didn't hear anything, and then Abby got a call out of the blue and was like, hey, you're never going to believe this. One of the producers from that show is now head of reality TV at CBS, and we had a team drop out for medical issues, and we presented you guys, and that producer remembered you, worked on that show with you, Ryan, and so we're going to make the exception. And we said, oh, my God, you got to be kidding. You know, this is great. We're in. So that was, you know, that started back in October of 2011 and took us all the way until April 2012, that whole process of making a tape and having interviews and then being told no and then being told yes. So it's a pretty extensive process.
Well, it seems like it's very extensive and interesting in so many ways, because you again, people think reality television, oh yeah, it's simple to get on a reality television show. Well, that's not the case. And creating your own, that's even more of a difficult thing. I've been talking to some experts on that, so that's a goal of mine, to have my own reality TV show. We'll see if that ever happens. You just never know about these opportunities, Ryan, and where they present themselves. But again, then you guys knew about The Amazing Race when you first got the call up, meaning you're going to do this and you were getting ready to travel and you heard the itinerary, you had to have been blown away, weren't you?
Well, it's fascinating because, you know, we send in our passports while we're applying, kind of going through the finals preparation period. So we send off our passports and we don't get them back until a couple days before we actually leave. And what they do is, A, they don't tell you ahead of time where you're going, but you do have to go sit for all your shots and immunizations. When you get into, we went to L.A. before we left on the race, and we were all in a hotel together with the other teams. We got our passports back, and we flipped through every page that got stamped for visas. And there was a bunch of, you know, phony visas in there, real visas, but for countries we didn't end up going to. So we could not prepare. We did not know the itinerary. We did not know we were going to China first until we jumped off the bridge in Pasadena and got our first clue, which said, make your way to the airport. There'll be two flights to China. So, you know, the only preparation we did was literally on that first flight to China, and we're reading down the, you know, on the backs of the seaplanes, they have sort of information on the city you're going to be visiting or flying into, and we're taking that information, which really, you know, except for, it's funny, because I would say normally that doesn't matter, but in China there was a little bit of a map and on that plane, and so we had an idea of where the Bund was, which is where the first pit stop was, and we ended up winning that leg of the race because we knew where the signal tower was located on the Bund, and we got there first ahead of some other teams that actually had helped us along the way. And that qualified us for the $2 million grand prize if we were to win the race, whereas everyone else would be racing for $1 million. So, you know, all of that happened over a 17-hour flight. It was pretty much, you know, a whirlwind at that point.
Right, and you're like thinking, where are we going next? How am I? Am I physically in shape, which it seems like you are, and your girlfriend, to be able to handle this? And are we going to be able to handle the stress involved in this? Because you watch the show, you see how crazy it is, and how they really don't give you much information, and there's all these clues, and you wouldn't think, you think sometimes when you talk to people, Ryan, that reality television show is not really reality. But in this one, it sounds like that parts of it definitely are real.
I came back telling people, you know, even while it was airing, I was blown away by the edit that they did, because it was so accurate to what I remembered. The events were happening, and they were capturing those events accurately. Now, there was a little gimmicky stuff with the audio. One thing that comes to mind, that first leg when we were rappelling down the Pasadena Bridge, it was a free rappel, and Abby got ahead of me, and she was sort of yelling at me, let's go, hurry up. And I'm saying, Abby, you know, I'm the one that's breaking our fall. I'm using my hands. If I let go, we fall. And anyway, she's kind of like in the moment, and that's cool. Well, that next day in China, when we're racing another team that had actually given us information on where a clue was, and we're running past them, and I'm ahead of Abby, and the audio all of a sudden comes on with Abby saying, come on, hurry up, let's go, but she's behind me. And so I was like, oh, that's not really accurate. That was really taken from the bridge rappel, but it makes for a good story where she's encouraging me to pass this other team. And, you know, and that being said, for the most part, the editing is spot on, right? No one has ever told us, you know, you need to say this, or you guys need to do that.
Right.
You go, and they get what they, you know, because they know they're going to get what they want to get. It's not going to be tough. We're not eating. We're not sleeping. We're in very stressful situations. It's not going to be hard to get us to sort of, you know, be impulsive or, you know, explosive or anything like that. So, you know, they do a great job of portraying what actually happened. But there's always tricks, you know, to make it a little more interesting.
Well, it seems like they'll definitely be those tricks, and that's what producers do, right? They have they think about ideas of how to make it so that people can put their foot in their mouth. And I wear two hats, I guess, in the radio game, where I'm producing, and also I guess I'm writing in certain ways as well, ideas. And when I do shows that are not just interviewing a star, I get people caught off guard. They wouldn't think the topic and what question I'm going to ask and see what they say. And that's probably what
exactly.
They do. They do the same thing. I'm going to put them in a position. You're not able to eat. You're lacking sleep. So guess what? Dropping an F-bomb, that might happen. Or getting upset and yelling, that might happen. That's what makes reality television what it is. And it's very interesting that what I said before is that it is real in certain aspects. Now, what would you say was your most exciting experience of the whole race? Country you went to, or what race was the best?
I can tell you that when we got into Bangladesh, we live in San Diego, so we're close to the border in Mexico, and Tijuana is a very, very, very poor place. So, you know, we have some sort of experience going into an area like that. But I'll tell you, when we flew into Dhaka, Bangladesh, I had never seen poverty like that. I mean, we're talking garbage dumps with people sort of feeding there, and you see kids, little kids walking down the street with IVs in their arm. Just stuff that's just horrific, you know, holes in the ground to go to the bathroom. It's not sanitary, dead animal carcasses in the streets, you know, people just walking past, you know, very few paved roads, kids playing in rivers next to sewage. I mean, it's just, the list goes on and on. That, you know, you ask about exciting, but to me that was the most powerful experience for us. And we were there for two legs of the race. So we were there for a few days, and you really get a sense of, you know, you're not, I can compare it with Istanbul and sort of racing through Turkey over a 6-hour period and getting in and getting out. You know, we saw the architecture. We were on a ferry crossing the Bosphorus Strait, and it was gorgeous. The architecture was beautiful and the people were lovely, but you don't really get, you know, in 6 hours, a true sense of the city. But in Dhaka, it was so powerful. I think we just kind of were like, you know, this is why we're so lucky to live where we live, and we're so blessed to have what we have, and you do take it for granted. And then you go into a place like that, and it snaps you right back. We went through a jute mill as one of part of the tasks that we had to do, where we had to create a jute, go into a jute manufacturing plant and work with the jute for, it took about 45 minutes. And we had a leader in there that was walking us through, and this was a true sweatshop. And it was row and row of, you know, we're in 120 degree heat outside.
Yeah.
And then, you know, couple that with the machines that are working inside. These guys, these men that were working in there, were all in their boxer shorts, and that's it. And they're just dripping sweat. And Abby and I were just looking at each other like, you know, is this reality? I've never seen anything like that. And even if you saw it, you know, on TV or in some other medium on the internet, it would not hit you like it hit you.
Exactly.
In person. And so that was incredible. And so we had said before we left, you know, where do you want to go? Wouldn't it be cool if we went to Australia? Wouldn't it be cool if we went to Africa? And then you come off the show and you're like, thank God we didn't go to those places. And we got to see places that we probably never would have traveled before.
True, definitely.
But for the race. And that was really like, wow, you know, we didn't win the $2 million, but look what we did win. We won these like life-changing experiences. So for that, we're grateful.
Well, and that's the important thing, the experience you'll never forget. And it's so, and it really teaches you a lot to say, hey, we should be happy with what we have. When you're talking about the poverty and that you talked about, it's just, it's something that, and so for people who did not watch the show, and I can say, I think I watched a couple episodes. I think this is the one with Buddha in it and stuff. This is the only one I probably watched, Ryan. I was really into it. I forget, there was this one part. I can't remember for the points, but you really look familiar when I saw your picture, and I said, I think I watched that one, but I'll have to go back and watch part of your YouTube or something to say, was that the one I watched? But I really liked the show, and the reason I did is because it's so fast action, and I'm like, wow. So what happened with you? What place did you guys finish?
So, you know, like I said, we came out guns blazing. We won the first leg, and for the first time in 21 seasons, the premise was if you win the first leg of the race and then you win the race, you win $2 million. So
right.
we came out and we won the first leg. You know, we finished first among 11 teams, and that immediately put a target on our back. And then the third leg, we won the third leg, which yielded us a trip to Fiji for 5 nights. And so once we won two of the first three legs, I think everybody was like, all right, that's the team to beat. And then after that, we ended up coming in second three places in a row. About the seventh leg of the race, we had a major flight snafu that involved our production camera team and then regular flight issues and leaving Moscow going into Russia. And once that happened, we weren't able to make up the time. So by the time we did get out of Russia and into Amsterdam, we were so far behind the three or four other teams that were left, and we got U-turned, which is a device in the game where you can send a team that has completed one roadblock or detour to do the other detour, and we had to do that. We got hit with that, and we couldn't make up the time. So we finished in fifth place. There was four other teams that were still racing when we were eliminated, and that was just sort of luck of the draw. You know, it's just bad luck. And we had four missed flights due to different issues. We had a weather problem. We had a mechanical de-icing problem. We had to get off a plane. We weren't allowed to board one flight because we didn't check in properly. And then we had a flight issue because of our production team. So, you know, you just chalk it up to, look, we signed up for this. You know, no one put a gun to our head and forced us to sign a contract and go on the amazing race. So anything that happened was, you know, it is what it is. And unfortunately for us, it cost $2 million. You know, we couldn't say we would have won, but, you know, after being eliminated, someone had emailed us and said, you guys realize you're like one of the top 10 teams on based on average finish of any team of any season.
Oh, my.
So, you know, you kind of say we probably had a good chance at winning. I don't know that it was guaranteed, but, you know, we certainly were the front-running team. And that's tough to swallow, but you get over it and you look back on, look, we won trips. We got to go around the world. You know, we got to watch this back on TV. I mean, think about any vacation you've ever taken, how fun it would be to watch it on TV and see everything that happened. So we got that experience. And then out of that, you know, I got, you know, some incredible opportunities. Obviously, the book was the biggest one that came my way, and it would not have happened but for the show. And so, you know, it's hard to put a price on that stuff. So we're very, very lucky.
How tired were you after the event? I mean, after you got back, how many days did it take?
Yeah, well, it's funny because you're racing about between four and six hours a day, and that's not the whole day. But by the time you get back to your hotel, you know, I would do the laundry for us. Abby would ice her leg or her knee and work on her body. And I would be in bed at 3 p.m. or 4 p.m, and I could sleep easily 12 hours. I would just be exhausted. And so when we got eliminated from the show, we stayed in New York for a few days while the other teams were finishing their race. And that's where we got caught up on our rest. But what ended up happening when we got back to California, I dropped about 12 pounds of muscle and fat. And, I'd already leaned down for the show while we were training before we even left for about a month. And so I lost about 12 more pounds. I mean, that's a lot for me. I weighed about 180 when I walk around. I lost about 10 pounds to get in shape for the show. And then I came home and weighed about 160 pounds. So it was pretty dramatic. And then Abby got Giardia, which is a pretty intense intestinal virus. And that stuck with her for about 4 to 6 weeks. And that's just kind of violent, you know, throwing up, and so we weren't really tired, but we had been definitely sort of depressed physically.
Yes.
From all that intense travel. And, you know, you don't realize that because you don't see it on TV after the show's over, but, you know, it took a good 3 to 4 months to kind of get back to normal.
Wow.
That's about a year of invested time from when we first applied to when we got home and back to normal.
See, that's wild. But then the opportunities come because people see you on TV and say, hey, you know what? And let's talk about the book opportunity, but let me hear about any of the other opportunities as well. So then you have more options. You have more options in your career, what you wanted to do. So, Ryan, how did you get this opportunity with the book? Basically, did somebody approach you?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, absolutely. That's what happened. We had done some interviews, and I was discussing my legal background. I'm a California licensed attorney, and in addition to that, one thing that, you know, kind of separates me is I train and compete in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And I was talking about how those things prepared me for the race and an interview. And it just so happened that the American Bar Association is doing a book series this year called, the first in their flagship book is called Yoga for Lawyers. And it's basically part of their wellness and health and holistic book series, which is aimed at making lawyers kind of step outside of the law office and sort of get perspective and get balance in their life. And it got such a good response that the publisher decided to go out and sort of create sister pieces. And so one of the executive editors was reading a bio on me and had watched the race, and was saying, oh, okay, so this guy's a lawyer and he does this jiu-jitsu thing. And, you know, that's sort of like yoga, I guess, in a sense. And so we've kind of had preliminary discussions, and I'd done some travel blogging based on my adventure. And so they had some writing samples, and he encouraged me to put a proposal together. And so, you know, I'd never done anything like this, really. I no real formal writing experience whatsoever. And so I said, sure, you know, I'm happy to, and curious to see where this goes. And so I did, and they presented it, and it was a hit internally. And so I've been in the writing process since last November, and the manuscript is due this June. And it's a very, very kind of abstract thing for me to get a hold of. I find myself wanting to sit down and write, and I don't have what's called writer's block, but I do have an issue with going back and wanting to edit work. And so I'm still learning that, you know, how to write creatively and freely and not look back on what I've already written and come back to that. So it's a very interesting process. It's very therapeutic. There's been a lot of things, you know, when Abby and I applied for the show, what stood out about us, I think, was that we were kind of coined as the dating divorcee couple. And so that's a little bit unique, but the truth is I've been divorced and she has too. And for me, mine was much more recent. And I found that writing this book has offered me some therapy in that situation and some stuff that I repressed and didn't acknowledge and stuff that's now coming out in writing. So, you know, I highly recommend it. It's a lot cheaper than therapy, but it's equally as beneficial. And I'm really enjoying it. I told the editor, I said, look, I'm going to agree to most of your terms that you're going to send over on the contract because you're taking a chance on me. But if this goes well, I'm going to come back to you with some other book ideas, and that's where I'm going to make, you know, the real money. And they kind of laughed and said, let's see how this one goes. But, you know, I'm enjoying it. I don't need to see my face on the camera to feel like, you know, being taking advantage of some of these talents, I guess.
Are you looking at doing any other TV? Is that any other?
You know, one of the so like you said, you know, there are opportunities. And with The Amazing Race and even like with The Apprentice, you're talking about two cream of the crop reality
yes.
TV programs. You know, this isn't Bad Girls Club or, you know, you're talking about very savvy people on both sides of the camera. And so because of that, you know, we've been able to, we got a Lululemon product endorsement opportunity, and we got a fitness backpack product endorsement opportunity. And there's people up in LA that are saying, you know, you guys present well together and you would be good at hosting or, you know, other product endorsements. So, you know, we're also under contract with CBS for the year. So that's sort of keeping us a little bit out of the loop on taking stuff now. But, you know, we're definitely intrigued and we are getting interest, which is nice to see. And, you know, we have things to offer that's unique individually with Abby, her design and dance background, and me with this old jiu-jitsu and entrepreneurial legal stuff, and then us as a couple. So, you know, we're exploring it, but we don't, you know, we really can't do anything for, you know, quite a few months.
So under contract with CBS for only certain things you're allowed to talk about, so, and I understand the whole gist, but then after that's over, who knows where you go from here? And I hope that I can interview you monthly to kind of get updates of where you're going, what's happening, especially with the book, and to kind of delve into more of your background more, because you're a very interesting guest, and I really enjoyed talking to you. But where can we find more information on you, Ryan? And I can't wait till the book's out. You'll have to tweet me about that, but where we can find info on you and learn more about you.
Yeah, I appreciate all that. I'm very active on Twitter, and that's at Ryan, R-Y-A-N, Danz, D-A-N-Z. And the Facebook is a public page there, and I update that frequently. And one thing that I've been doing through my website, RyanDanz.com, is keeping people up to date with the writing process. I think people are finding it very interesting to kind of see as someone is writing and in the writing process, how that goes. And along the way, if things come up with Lululemon or some other product endorsement stuff that we're doing, you know, we're sure to put up pictures and we, you know, try and engage in question and answer forums, especially as the new Amazing Race comes out in the next couple of weeks. You know, people are always interested in asking questions about what they, you know, saw, what really happened, what didn't happen. So, you know, social media is such a powerful tool, and I try to use it so that I can connect with people that are fans of, you know, whether it's The Amazing Race or, you know, the book or whatnot. So that's where I am, and it's me. It's no one else, you know, talking for me. So I look forward to hearing from your guests, that's for sure.
All right, well, fantastic. Look forward to contacting your agent, have you back next month, and we'll be tweeting you out and promoting you all over the place. So thanks again for calling, man.
You got it. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, take it, Ryan. Okay, you're okay, listening tonight. To the Total Education Celebrity Show.
And our next guest is someone that's done exactly the same thing. And you know, one of the things that we found is the power of Twitter. We've become friends on Twitter. You know, I know you initially started the relationship, and then, you know, here all because of Twitter, we've become friends, and now she's going to be on our show today, and so I'm really excited. And she's a 2-time Olympian from Jamaica, and as everyone that's listened to the show, I consider myself a Jamaican, and I spent so much time in Jamaica, and last night I realized I have actually seen Siobhan run in the Olympic trials, which I was in attendance at, so I actually got to see her run live. And so she's a 2-time Olympian. She ran the 400-meter hurdles. And as my dear friend Jerome Davis says, that is the hardest event out there, running full 400 meters all out. And then you add the hurdles, so that's definitely a tough thing. And then, you know, now she's a model. She's a singer, songwriter, producer. She does it all. So please welcome to the show, Siobhan, daughter, please welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, Siobhan, I've talked to you a few times, and I want to learn, again, go into the process of this being an entrepreneur show to really also, it'll be nationally syndicated and internationally syndicated as well, the interview. But really for our listening audience today to understand, I guess, the thought process, you started out in track and you had a successful career and still career in track, and you're training to continue to be do well at the world championships. But the question I have to ask is why the other types of ventures, the modeling, the music, what drives you to really want to do this? I mean, especially because you could just stick to being an athlete, but you want to be the jack of all trades when it comes to, I guess, celebrity status. So tell us, what is the reason that's driving you through music and I guess also modeling?
Well, definitely, you know, when I was younger, I first had the passion to be a singer, and that's what I wanted to do. But in my process, I ended up running really fast. And, you know, I've been running, been able to make a 2 Olympic team, still running right now. And I knew that, you know, one day I would definitely uniquely combine my talents together. And a lot of times I come by young people and they're talented in more than one area. I actually went to a Jamie Nieto's track clinic the other day at the Olympic Training Center, and I was speaking to a little girl, and she wanted to produce movies, but she wanted to jump as well. So she thought that, oh, maybe she wouldn't jump because she wanted to focus on that. And I told her, you know, you don't have to do that. You know, basically, as far as being an athlete, you have a time period in your life when you're able to actually do that. And you can do movies and sing, you know, pretty much acting for the rest of your life. And a lot of times people are gifted in other areas and they might put one on the back burner, don't even do it. But, you know, it's your life, and you definitely want to use the talents that, you know, that you were given. And and that's what I'm doing. You know, I was talented at singing and with running and writing, and definitely look to put out some material later as a book. But, you know, I definitely feel like with the talents that I have, I can combine them. And when I give my fans, you know, my music, are they able to see me run, or any other things that I plan on doing, you know, I kind of give back a piece of me, and you get to see all of who I am.
Well, I think that one thing that always you look at, and GJ was talking about this right before introducing you, is to create an image that you know that you can make a difference even when you retire as an athlete. You have all these other options, but everything that really you can get you in front of people. And GJ, that's the, like you said before, the so important, the image, the branding of an entrepreneur is so key, G. We talked about this so many times, haven't we?
Well, we've had hours and hours of conversation, you know, both on, you know, offline and online, the show, and you know, it's developing that image and who you are, and being able to be able to connect with the public for whatever it is that you're involved with, you know, to your products, services, and you know, obviously your company. And so when you've got the right branding, it definitely helps in the ease of your entrepreneurial business. And Siobhan, obviously you've done that, and you know, I mean, you're plastered all over, you know, the internet with, you know, especially with, you know, from the, you know, the, all of the great photos and being a great athlete. And exactly. And so it just shows the power of that image. And then, you know, hanging out with Usain Bolt, who one of my goals is to run against Usain. And as funny as that is that I've been training as an athlete, as a sprinter. And I'm 51 years old, and obviously there's no way I'm going to beat him, but I want to run against him and run for charity. And
oh, so that's
one
great.
Of my goals, to have some fun with it and, you know, do it for a good cause. And I know you've got some, you know, several causes that you're involved with. And so why don't you tell a little bit about what you're actually doing right now with your career?
Well, right now, as you know, I'm preparing for a world championship. I'm also in a process of writing a book that I plan to release in the near future. You know, I'm working on my music. You know, I'm doing other various things when it deals with fashion and stuff, and, you know, planning different things where we can get, for the future, to get athletes and people like yourself that would want the chance to run with, you know, great Olympians and do different kind of events or clinics. So definitely always working on things like that and ways that, you know, I can give back to my fans.
And I think that's so key. And I mean, definitely one thing I want to look at, Siobhan, when we're talking about this is, again, your music. Now, you released a single last time we talked, right? Or there was how's that going? The interest of that since it's been...
Everything's going well. Actually, I'm not sure because I know that you do follow me. I actually met up this weekend with Steve Willie White, which produced David Matthews Band, and was hanging out a lot this weekend. So there's possibly a liking that we'll do a song together. And, you know, just working on the other projects coming up, especially with the championships coming up. And, you know, every athlete needs a theme song, right?
Well, definitely. And GJ needs a theme song as well. And maybe we need to get you to sing a song that we could play in between breaks of the Beach Lifestyle Show. Because, again, I think...
Oh, definitely. I will definitely send that to you.
Oh, that'd be awesome. And, don't you agree? Every athlete needs a theme song. So for his... And GJ calls himself the Yoda of athletics, uh-huh. especially when I'm going to take him out in basketball. So what we need, uh-huh. we need a Star Wars theme for you, G.
Well, that's true, but actually, y'all are the ones that tagged the phrase Yoda, I guess because I'm so old. I like the self-proclaimed name of Fast Puma. I wear Puma, and I'm training to be as fast as a Puma. So we definitely have that in common, because I know Puma has been one of your sponsors, and, you know, yours and Usain, and obviously that's big, and... in Jamaica, and every time I go to Kingston, I go to the Puma store, and they think I've lost my mind because I go, I buy almost one of everything that's my size.
Yeah. You said that you were at one of my trials, my Jamaican trials. Which one were you?
I went to every race. At the trials this past year, 2012.
Oh, wow. Oh, so you did get to see me. That was a great race.
So I did see it, and I you know, I didn't, you know, who knew where this was, you know, where it was going to lead to. And
yeah.
So, yeah, so I was very blessed. I was front row.
Oh, wow.
Front row on every race, you know, both the men's and the women's. And so, you know, it was definitely pretty exciting. You know, there Thursday through Sunday, I was.
Well, hopefully you'll be back this year. And after I run, I can come straight over to you and give you a high five.
All right.
I would love that. So we just need to find out what those dates are and definitely connect. Now, are you? I know you spend time out in L.A. Because I'm going to be out in L.A. in the next couple weeks.
Yes, I'm actually I'm out here in L.A. That's where I live. That's where I train right now. And I'm actually in the weight room doing my workout right now. But I did take the moment to come out and speak with you guys.
Because, again, Siobhan never ignores my tweets. She never ignores my messages. And we're really creating this awesome relationship. And you're really getting me into the whole Olympic thing. GJ, I'm going to throw out something even better. When Siobhan makes the Olympics in 2016 in Brazil, you're going to help. Yeah. GJ is going to fly us out to cover it, right, G?
Yeah.
I like the way that sounds, and maybe I should start training even a little harder so I can run in the 2016.
Well, when you come out here to LA, if you want to get a session in, you can come out here to the track.
Well, I definitely will do that, and I know we have a mutual friend in Jerome Davis.
Oh yeah.
And Jerome is, you know, him and his wife are dear friends of mine and my wife. And he speaks so highly. He said, "You are the nicest person he knows."
So I told him,
"Well, I'm, when I come out here, I've been training to run fast, but I said, who's going to train me to run fast?" Of course, I know he's a world-class sprinter, and he has a boot camp. I'm just going to tell him that you offered. And I'm going to go with somebody a little bit faster, Jerome. So I'm going to go with Siobhan.
So,
you're free to come out.
Siobhan, now what we try to do at the finish up in a lot of ways is looking at the focus of where you want to be in the next 90 days. Again, you're training for the world championships are coming up. You have your music goals. You have your book goal. You have all these different things. So what is your 90-day challenge? What do you want to accomplish in the next 90 days?
Well, in the next 90 days, that would lead me into the outdoor season. Before then, February 2nd, I plan to run a race indoors, but March, the first weekend in March, we'll start our outdoor season. So I will be racing at least 3 weekends in March, April, 3 weekends in April. April will be my first international competition where I'll run in the Bahamas. So that will be... you know, what I'm looking forward to open up in the 400 hurdles outdoor, as well as bringing my book into the Evan Gaines stages so it can be ready to come out later. So just really working and putting everything together step by step and just enjoying what I do every step of the way. But it'd be great, though, you know, when you guys come out here to L.A. to come out to the track and maybe see me work out, because a lot of times, you know, people don't get to see what it really takes to do what we do. And you just see those 54, 53 seconds that you see us do out there on the track and run really fast. But if you can come out here and actually see the process of what it really takes, that would be great.
Well, I'll see again, GJ run. Again, I'm 6'10", Siobhan. I'm just going to take him out in basketball and Jerome in basketball when I'm out in L.A. in March, because I'm going to be out in L.A. in March, and I'm challenging GJ.
Oh, great. Maybe you'll be able to come to one of our meets then, because we do have a meet out here. So I'll definitely let you know when it is, see if you guys are going to be here that weekend.
All right. Well, let's hope. Let's set everything up. And I hope when GJ comes back to L.A., you guys can sit down, talk, and chat about specific things. And again, Siobhan, I'm looking forward to the next guest that you're going to send me of your friends. I know there's some more, and I'll just tweet them out to make sure we get the right G. We really enjoyed Lucinda, and we look forward to more, right, G?
Yes.
Isn't that true?
Yeah, this relationship's definitely been a blessing to us, and we choose to reciprocate, and anything we can do to help you and, you know, with your book and anything you're doing, and we definitely want to have you back on the show. So for our listening audience, where are they able to find more information on you?
You can follow me on Twitter at Siobhan Stoddard, S-H-E-V-O-N, Stoddard, S-T-O-D-D-A-R-T. My Facebook fan page, Siobhan Stoddard Official. I'm on the new MySpace that we have out. So you could find me in a lot of different places. So, and I'm always tweeting, always sharing it with you what I'm doing throughout my day.
Well, you definitely are, and you're an interactive Twitterer, of which GJ and I have talked about before. That's the ones we really want the relationship, because we kind of share information between each other, and look forward to connecting on Twitter again very, very soon. And thanks again for calling, and I'm looking forward to meeting you in LA, and I'm hoping maybe we get the opportunity to meet at the Visalis event, or you could check our basketball game out. GJ and I will play on Thursday and see how a former athlete, a professional wrestler, is just a much more talented athlete. I'm just playing, Siobhan, compared to Jerome Davis's career in USC, and also GJ training now. It doesn't matter. On the basketball court, I will dominate. So we'll look forward to meeting in March, and thanks again for calling, Siobhan.
Thank you.
All right, take care. All right.